from socialservice.sg, I am Jing Yao. On this podcast, we've moved away from direct features of charities and social service agencies, not only because there are so many with interesting stories, but also because a greater focus on systemic trends and structural solutions involving multiple parties feels more productive. Nevertheless, the story of Glyph Community and one of its founders, Lim Sihui, was very compelling. Glyph is a charity offering non-academic enrichment programs to disadvantaged children, and 26-year-old Sihui herself dropped out of university to work at and manage Glyph full-time. Given her young age, leading a direct service charity, I was interested in how she managed staff and volunteers, challenges she faced, and how she navigated the broader social work and social service space in Singapore as a young leader. Welcome to the podcast, Sihui. So this is what I shared about you in the preamble, right? You are 26-year-old. You are part of the founding team of the charity Glyph Community. You decided against completing your studies at the National University of Singapore or NUS to work full-time at Glyph Community. So first, tell us what the name Glyph means or represents, and tell us a little bit more about the work of your charity.
Right. Thank you very much, Singel. So Glyph, by dictionary standards, stems from the word hieroglyphs. Right. So in ancient times, people used to draw symbols to mean certain things, like how we use emojis nowadays.
Yeah.
For us, though, Glyph stands for a symbol of hope, strength, and courage. Our goal is that for anyone who walks through our doors, be it the children, our interns, employees, or even volunteers, that they have the hope for their future, courage to actually pursue something they truly enjoy, and the strength to carry on. And that's why we call ourselves Glyph, so symbol of hope, strength, and courage. Glyph Community primarily runs programs for children from disadvantaged communities, mm-hmm. and we focus on non-academic programs, so very different from what we are already doing in school. So we actually want kids to go out there and learn outside of school. So we do sports, arts, science and technology. Every weekend it's fun and games. We always tell the parents there are no exams over here. You know, just have fun, just be kids. And yeah, I realized that these were opportunities that it's almost like a privilege, right? Playing, enjoying, having fun, learning outside of school. It's a privilege, especially for kids who can afford it and parents who could spend time. For a lot of the kids that we work with, they don't have that privilege. And that's the gap we're trying to bridge. And so, yeah, we kind of developed our own framework for at-risk children. We call it our IPO framework, like how successful companies IPO on the stock exchange. Our goal is to IPO children into successful individual, and our IPO means indoor learning, people learning, and outdoor learning.
Gotcha. So indoor learning, people learning, and outdoor learning that focus on non-academic kind of engagement, right? So, you know, folks who are listening to this, probably social workers working for other SSAs, they might be wondering, so, you know, in the context of other charities and social work organizations or social service agencies working with similar communities with disadvantaged or low-income families and youth, how would you say Glyph Community complements those agencies and their work?
Right. So where we come in, we feel that we are an education player in the whole social space, and we want to continue doing that. So for family service centers, as well as other social agencies, their focus might be on casework, and it's usually staffed by social workers. For us, we're a little bit different. We are staffed with teachers, educators who run classes for these children. So our primary focus is really on enriching children for them to go beyond their school. So we actually work with community partners so that we can create a whole support system where the family service centers would come in, social workers would come in, assess the situation, figure out what's required for the family, be it financial aid, home care. And if they feel that their kids would benefit from our program, they would actually drop us an email, they'll reach out to us. And then that's when we get to know about these children and we enroll them into our program. So I would say we have quite a deep network with the families, especially at our locations at Boon Lay and Marsiling, where the family service centers would always share with us certain cases families are comfortable to or want to have their kids join our program. And at the same time, we also keep in touch with them because there are certain instances where we can't support the families, right? Yeah. I still very much run programs for children. So if they're coming to me to tell me that, hey, they are looking for employment and all, I wouldn't be the right person. So I would direct them again to the right person. So that's kind of where we see ourselves. Our goal is that we can kind of support the family in the, specifically in education, not so much in other areas, because we just feel that we need to have a niche, and our niche should be education and specifically non-academics, because no one has really focused on this. From time to time, yeah, there are agencies who do one-off programs, but we want to do it every week. So it's a consistent engagement for these children.
Yeah. And that's so important, because I think the words you're using, right, plugged in, network, doing warm handoffs, that to me is unique in a sense where, maybe not unique, but important in a sense where you're complementing the work of existing agencies, right? Rather than than saying, oh, you're doing this completely wrong, let me show you how to do it. But you're plugging and playing into the system, which is really important. Yeah. And so far, so wait, we've learned a fair bit about the charity, right? The reason why I was so excited to talk to you was to turn to you more personally, where turning the conversation to focus on some of the decisions you made and how you think about leading a charity and so forth, right? So maybe to set the scene, take us through, you know, your thought process when you decided to leave NUS and do Glyph Community full-time, right? Because I cannot imagine your parents being very excited about hearing that. So I don't know if that was your experience, but tell us more about the experience you had.
Right. So maybe I'll just take everyone back in time. So perhaps from the first instance where I kind of wanted to come into the social space. So I was 16. I did a mission trip in Cambodia. So when I went there, we kind of visited villages every day. We spent about maybe 4 hours with the kids over there. We cooked for them. We played for them. We taught them English, all that kind of fun stuff. But then every night I went back to the motel and I was thinking, to be honest, after 4 hours, these kids probably wouldn't remember me.
Yeah.
I'm just any old person who's going there to help them. And I realized that the impact just wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
I wanted to do something that was sustainable, but I didn't know what to do. I mean, I was 16. So, I mean, I just continued to enjoy myself, going to the villages, having fun, meeting the children. But at the back of my head, it kept eating at me. I was like thinking, what should I do? Can I actually support this community in the long run? So that was my first exposure. And then my second exposure was when I was 19. So that's when we start university, right? So I did my first internship at Glyph. So I was an intern. It was just a small setup. So, okay, I'll set the scene, right? It's a very small space. So imagine the office can only fit 3 people. There are 2 tables and only 1 set of drawers.
Uh-huh.
And when everyone is seated, you can move. But if someone has to stand up, we literally have to move so that this person has to exit. So it was terrible. And long story short, the landlord actually ran away with our money. So that was, that was quite a horrible start to my internship. That was my first month. So I was thinking like, oh my gosh, is that what happens when you come out and work? But yeah, so that kind of happened. But through the whole process, I actually got to meet a lot of families on the ground, rental flat families. And while I wasn't from a very privileged background, I never really went to a rental flat, speak to families, talk to them and figure out, you know, what's happening. So then I started talking to these families and I realized that they do get a lot of support in terms of academics, in terms of like CDAC, Mendaki, SINDA and the Eurasian community. Even my brother went to see when he was in primary school. So I kind of knew about it. But there wasn't really a lot of support in terms of non-academics. And when you think of education as a whole, it's not just that paper qualification. You also want to look at soft skills that would future-proof yourself, right? And that kind of also made me think about myself being in university, why I was there, taking a degree. Of course, I was like the first person who made it to university, very happy, going to FASS, all my friends were there. Everything was great. But I realized I was in school because all my friends were in school and I just didn't know what the hell I wanted to do at 18. And I think a lot of people also struggle with that. I want to do good, but I don't know where I want to go. So that's why I decided to just stay in school and follow the route. So that kind of made me think about the whole education space. And then I guess long story short, I realized that, okay, we needed someone full-time to run it. No one else is going to do it. So just let me do it lah. So then, like what I share with everyone, the decision wasn't difficult. If anything, it was just a very quick decision. Like, okay, like no one's going to do it, so I'm going to do it. But the consequences were not as fun to deal with. But that's part of growing up, right? Being responsible for any decision that you make. And I'm not encouraging everyone to just quit school. So for me, when I left school, I think the first thing was that I told my parents that actually I was on break.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, you know, it's just a leave of absence and things like this. And then after, I think in about a week's time, so I was on bank loan, right? So then DBS sends this letters, physical letter, straight to your mailbox. Okay, so back then I was like sleeping in office because I was just doing it full time. And then my dad opens up this letter. It says that you have to pay like the whole year full of school bills. Yep. Then he was asking me, why do we need to do that? We only have to pay at the end. And I was like, shit. So I had to tell them. So yes, I told them. And yeah, I think at the start, everyone, right, they're like, oh, why can't you just do this later? Can't you just do this on the side? So on and so forth. But I was just I'm an all or nothing person. If I really believe in it, I want to do it, then let me do it lah. To me, school will always be there. I can always go back to school. And again, is there a need for me to have this paper qualification at this point? I didn't feel that I needed it. And so, yeah, eventually my parents kind of realized that they couldn't stop me either and that I could take care of myself. And so, yeah, I think right now they have no choice but to be supportive because they can't go against me. So, yeah, that's kind of how I decided to leave NUS. No fancy story or anything, but yeah, it was just kind of like something I felt I needed to do. Like, if not, no one else was going to do it.
Yeah, and so in terms of doing it, right, you have your formal title. What I'm interested in actually in the work that you do right now, transitioning from initially being an intern and now leading the organization, how would you describe your roles and responsibilities within Glyph community, right? And it strikes me because one of your first anecdotes just now was doing an overseas service learning or CIP, right, where volunteer management is a big deal. So I'm really kind of interested in the way you think about how you manage your full-time staff, your part-time staff, and also your volunteers, right? Having been a volunteer yourself, having been an intern yourself, what are some of the challenges? So two-parter, I know I'm asking a lot of questions, but the first part is, what's your role and what are your roles and responsibilities within Glyph? And then the second part is people management, how is it going? And what are some of the challenges associated with that?
Right. So I'll just answer the first part in terms of my roles and responsibilities. So to the teachers and the parents and teacher star, so I'm one of the teachers that run the weekend programs. The reason why I became teacher star and not teacher Sihui is because the kids couldn't remember my name. And then one day this kid just came out with this name and then I just stuck with it for the past 5 years. But it's been great. Families can remember. And actually, I don't know if the kid knew. I think it was just like a coincidence, but the star shape was actually my favorite shape growing up. So I was like, oh, okay, so I'll be teacher star. For me, apart from running classes, I also do a lot of the outreach efforts. So I still meet with families, do family visits, do calls with them, build the relationship in the community, not just with the families, but also community partners. So these are actually very important individuals. They are grassroots leaders who are on the ground, who know the ground better than me, who know what the community needs. And so I work with them, I speak with them, I figure out how the residents here, what kind of support do they need? Would my program actually support these children over here? So that's kind of what I do. I guess when it comes to managing, example, volunteers, interns, new hires, I would say it's been extremely challenging because for me, I'm a very self-motivated individual. So I like to figure things out on my own. I can do things on my own. But when it came to having to guide people, I'm okay. But being responsible for them, it's another thing. It's really a challenge because if they screw it up, it's actually on you. It's not really on them. If they turn out well or not, the responsibility is on you. So that was a really big challenge for me. And again, I was 26. So all my other interns were like, what? Also in their 20s, right? So back then, 22, 23, and then you have interns who are even older than you. They're like year 3, year 4. I would have been in school with them. And then them coming in, trying to learn from me, both guys and girls. So it was really terrible because I could do my own work, but getting others to do the work, I think that was challenging. Motivating them, getting them to be on the same page, that was really difficult. But kind of through time, through a lot of failures, a lot of scoldings and all, I kind of figured out, okay, I would just want to be there to guide them, to push them in the right direction. And then they will kind of decide for themselves whether they want to put their best foot forward or not. And if they don't, it's all right, right? It's on them. And I don't have to kind of keep, I guess, like hounding myself for it. So that's with interns. I think with volunteers, it's really a whole different ballgame, because the thing is, they are volunteering their time,
yeah,
which is so valuable. So I think what I've realized is I've really felt very inspired and very thankful for my volunteers, because they decide to take a chunk of their time to meet and connect with people whom they have no relation, no blood ties with, to just build their relationship with them. And I think we should really recognize volunteers. Of course, there are times where there are volunteers, those who just come and clock hours, and those who are just trying to graduate. And I get so many of these. But yeah, it's all right. To me, it's like, if you come down, at least you know what's happening in the community.
Sure.
Be it just for 3 months and all. Just stay connected. It's fine if you're going to volunteer for 3 months regularly, finish your hours, graduate, start working. Life happens. And a lot of times these volunteers, when things get busy, of course, the first thing they might cut off is volunteering. And I think it's all right. As long as you still remember the community that you help and support, and come back occasionally, I think that's important. So eventually, my goal for these volunteers is that they feel socially connected. And I feel that's really important. I haven't gone back to Cambodia for like, it's been a decade. I've always wanted to go back. But when I think about it, I realize that there's so much more work that I have to do here in Singapore, where I'm based, that I don't think it's a priority right now. And if today, if I were to go back, I don't think I'm able to do any kind of impactful giving at this point.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, to me, it's like, I still remember the community and what it taught me. And I feel that's so much more important. And that's kind of how I see the volunteers. We can always complain our volunteers are late, you know, they're not turning up on time, all this kind of nonsense. They're not serious and all. And I think that's kind of part of working with volunteers, right? They are really just taking their own time out. To some extent, there's nothing in it for them, apart from really just helping you. So we kind of got to respect them also. But yeah, I think we have been very blessed. We have had volunteers who are just extremely loving and really been with us for so long. They are almost as familiar as our staff running the classes. So yeah, I think so. That's kind of how it is with the volunteers.
Yeah. If I may step out of my objective position as an interviewer and asking you, right? I think it sounds like sometimes you're very hard on yourself, right? And I think as someone who's listening, I feel like it's not necessarily the case where you have to go back and rectify or do something different. I think the way in which you've dedicated your time and effort right now is equally meaningful, if not, right? And to be able to exercise that degree of reflection and being reflective, that's really important also. Yeah. And we spent a lot of time discussing the way you do it internally within Glyph. The other part, which I'm always interested in when I meet younger folks in the social service sector who are leading organizations, is the external relationships, right? So when I'm thinking about the broader social work, social service space, a lot of them who are leaders, ED, CEOs are really old, right? They are much older. They have a lot more experience. So yeah. I guess I'm interested to hear about, and I guess listeners are really interested to also hear about, what is it like to navigate those spaces, right? Being such a young leader, not just young, but leading an organization that you're offering direct services. Because a lot of the other folks, they might be doing awareness things, but very few, I think, from my knowledge, are young social service leaders who are leading direct programs and services. So I'm interested to hear how your experiences have been in those spaces.
Yeah, so I think a little bit of white hair is always good. And I think when I go for events like the NCSS Summit, Social Service Summit, it's very funny because everyone there, I think the average age is like probably 40s or something.
Yeah.
So then they will always ask me, right? The most common question I get is, you're doing this full time? A volunteer, is it? Are you a volunteer? I get this like every week. Then I tell them, no, I'm doing this full time. Then they say, I can do this full time one. You're so young. Because in their point of view, right, it is the social service is either a mid-career switch or maybe a retirement job. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think with that comes a lot of wisdom and a lot of experience. And definitely, I think that has been, I would say, one of our main challenges as a very young organization.
Yeah.
Because we are going out to people and our average age is like, 25? My interns are as young as 18 years old. They are as young as my beneficiaries. We are going out there to tell them that we want to change the social space. We want kids from disadvantaged backgrounds to have access to quality education. But that being said, jokes aside, I think it has really been a great journey. We have a lot of guidance from our board of directors. Yep. Their wisdom has really helped us navigate, because for us, we are very focused on the groundwork. And for the directors, they come with a lot of wisdom, right?
Yep.
So they always take us 3-4 steps back, a zoomed out version. Think about, is this growing the right way? Are we just reacting to things instead of actually rectifying certain problems? So I think that's how they kind of guided us in the right direction. And I think that's just invaluable. Those are wisdoms and experiences that we wouldn't have had. We would have made so many more mistakes if not for their guidance and support. So I think our board of directors have really been great. And also partners as well. So partners who have kind of worked with us, ran programs for us, taught us. So we have example like coding schools. So they are really good at coding, right? So they teach coding. That's literally their bread and butter. I'm not going to teach coding. I want the kids to learn coding. So they come in and they train us so that we become competent to teach the children. That's kind of a more sustainable way forward. And so, yeah, with the partners and sponsors, with their support, we kind of were able to also kind of have our footing as an education player in the social space. So, yeah, I think these two groups of people have really helped us. Again, I wouldn't mind a little bit more white hair, but I feel like I might regret saying this because I'm really growing a lot more white hair in the past 6 to 7 years. But yeah, it's really an experience being a young player, because I do believe that we have our strengths, being agile, being more willing to change things. But at the same time, I'm grounded because I have a board of director who kind of just pushes us in the right direction.
Yeah, that's really important. I was going to summarize the learning being knowing what your strengths are and knowing where you need help in, and that ties in with how you select and what's the composition of your board. And that's going to be really important. Mm-hmm. Sometimes gets lost in conversations also. Yeah.
Yeah.
So looking back at your experience so far, what would you say are the 3 biggest challenges you've had to deal with or you've dealt with in the past? Could be something you've mentioned already, but just interested, mm-hmm. you reflecting retrospectively and seeing what lessons you've drawn and what challenges you've faced so far.
Right. So lots of challenges as a young charity. I don't know why we put ourselves in this situation, but yeah, lots of challenges. So I think the first thing, and I think this is a challenge regardless of whether you're a small charity or an established charity, it's fundraising. Because we are competing for the same pie, the same amount of donations with very established players out there. And that's kind of quite a struggle, right? Because we're going to establish ourselves. We're going to say that, hey, you should give your donation to us. Our program is impactful and you should put your dollars to it. So I think that has been one of our struggles, and also having that credibility, because people only want to donate if they know that you're credible. So fundraising is one. I think the second challenge that we have is really our volunteers. We call them playmakers. So our playmakers come on a weekly basis, and we do feel that it's very important that we expose our children to people beyond their direct environment. So not just their caregivers, their parents. Actually, volunteers not only coming to help teach the children, they also mentor and guide them. And I feel that's really important. So getting long-term volunteers would be kind of our second challenge, because it's very easy for a volunteer to say that, oh, I want to volunteer here, and then next year I want to volunteer somewhere else. And I think, again, it's okay. But having a familiar face, it's good for us as an organization. It's good for the kids. And I hope the volunteers do see it as a benefit for them as well. So I think that's our second challenge. The last challenge, which I guess I briefly talked about in my first point, is really establishing Glyph as a recognized name in the area of education and children. We do believe that brand awareness is very important. So our key objective is really a lot of the outreach efforts, going out there, sharing people about our brand, why we do what we do.
Yep.
I mean, Glyph in the first place is such a odd name, right? Like no one, so why couldn't we call ourselves like children's charity or something that people think like there are certain charities out there. You say already, you know what they do,
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Why do we have to call ourselves this obscure name, Glyph? So there's still a lot of, I feel like we're still in the early stages where people are kind of adopting it. So it's like Apple, right? So now we think of Apple, we think of Mac, iPhone. So we want to be the same as well. Think of Glyph, think of our children's charity. But that's going to take years to build. We don't have to rush into it anyway. But getting our name out is going to be very important, because year end comes, when the last quarter comes, when people think about who they want to give to, I want to be top of their mind. I want them to think about, hey, there's this charity, they're very small, but they're actually doing good work. I want to support them. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's opportune because the next question, the second last question I had was Glyph, even with its somewhat odd name, we'll be celebrating its 6th anniversary next year, which is a fairly long time, right? So I want to pose a question that's somewhat cliche, right? So now you get the project. You said challenges were associated with fundraising, with volunteer management, long-term volunteer management, and then with branding. So where do you see, personally and professionally, where do you see Glyph Community in the next 6 years, right? We have done one life cycle. What's one more life cycle going to be like for Glyph?
Right. So I think first 6 years have been amazing. Next 6 year, I do hope that we kind of become that catalyst in the education and the social space for individuals or even people in the social service agency to look at us and say, hey, they are doing something different and that different is good. How can we work with them to make sure that every child in Singapore has access to quality holistic education? And that's where I want to be in the next 6 years. When people talk about education, especially for this group of at-risk children, they think about us. And we do want to still be at the forefront of innovating, making sure that our programs are really things which the families need. And it's something that no one is not doing at this point. So I think it's a bit strange because if we were a for-profit education player, so like all the big brands out there, I think this would be their priority as well. But I want this to be our priority in the social space. And that's how it's going to be different because there's just too much focus on, say, families who can afford it. That families can't afford it, they're just going to be even further. And then the divide is just going to be bigger. Right, we don't see it now, but in the next 6 years, in the next 60 years, 600 years, these kids are going to struggle. So I want to still be at the forefront of pushing education and challenging the notion of what education is in Singapore, especially for these at-risk children, so that they too have that equal chance in life to find their path, find their passion, like how I did it. I do hope that more kids will have these opportunities. So that's kind of where I see ourselves in the next 6 years. Of course, if more people get to know about us, that's going to be great. But yeah, I want to make sure that people know that, okay, Glyph is, we're not like just a small little outfit. We're doing serious work. We're really changing how education is for kids. And I want you to listen up and see if we can work together.
Yeah. And based on that, I'm going to ask you a very annoying last question. You said 60, 100 years. Maybe not 600, but you know, where do you see Glyph Community in the next 60 years, right? So when you are 60, you might be the honorary president, founding, I don't know what the title would be, but when you see Glyph in the next kind of 60 years and its role and position, and wild guess, I don't expect, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to as well. So yeah.
yeah. I didn't think about myself. Now I realize, oh shucks, I'm going to be like 86, which is very old. I don't know how I'll look like by then. But I guess in the next 60 years, just to put it very bluntly, I don't know if Glyph would still be around. I don't know if perhaps our charity would still make sense, whether it would be in this current form today or if we would have pivoted and changed so much. I think the next 6 years is a bit freaky and a bit unknown to us. But again, being an educator and also starting this up from scratch, I do hope that it's kind of ingrained in our DNA to always be different, to always try to change things, always try to challenge the status quo. And yeah, that's kind of where I see it. Where it takes us, I'm not sure. Who knows? We might put ourselves out of business. And I think that's a good thing, yeah. Right? If today, say, for example, MOE decides the aid is doing something good, right? Maybe let's work with them. Then yeah, that's great. But I still want it to be in our DNA for us to never be complacent, to always figure out, hey, whether is this working for these kids? Should we try something else? Or if we realize that, hey, actually all kids have successfully had access to holistic education, we can close down. I can retire at 86. That would be a dream, honestly, because yeah, I think that's the goal of a lot of social workers and a lot of people in the social space also. Because if we can make ourselves redundant, then we would have really made a difference in these people's life. So yeah, so that's kind of where I see it in 60 years. I guess I gave a slightly more candid response because I kind of just thought of it and think, yeah, I mean, why not, right? If I can put myself out of business after 60 years, then I think I would have really made a difference in this space that I'm in. And yeah, why not, right?
Yeah. I'm just going to say that when and we've had a chat before this, and I shared with this that I was like, no, apprehensive, because we don't always feature agencies because there's so many of them. But when I met you for the first time, I heard your story and I was really excited to speak to you. And I think folks who listen to the episode today, hearing you speak about internally, externally, not that things won't evolve and change over time, but being so reflexive and reflective is not, it's not something that often comes by in a sector. And I hope folks can not just relate to the challenges that you might be facing, but also at some point as well, think about ways in which we can work together in different ways also. So, Siwei, thank you for your time. All the best with Glyph in the next 6 years, hopefully in 60 years, worked out for existence. But thank you very much. And this is really fun to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tingyao, for having me.